The DL Debate is brought to you by the Dry Arch Complex 24-hour service station, Letterkenny. We're here for all your needs.
It's Monday evening at 7 p.m. It's time for the DL Debate.
Check this.
Welcome one and all. In these strange times, we're keeping the DL Debate turning over. It's coming live from my house here in Lismorning, Letterkenny, via Canis up on Highland Radio there. He's keeping me right. We're doing it across the internet and live on the phone, putting both together. There might be an odd wee delay in there, but stay with us because we have a brilliant show coming up. Ed Byrne, current county board official, he's assistant secretary and fixtures secretary, is going to shed some light on the GAA world at the minute and where he sees fixtures going this summer. And after that, we have the brilliant book, Confessions of Gaelic Footballer, with, it's down as 92 All-Ireland winner Donald Reid, but he's given so much more to the county in a fascinating show, and a fascinating story and a fascinating book, as I say. And coming up first, we have Ed Byrne on the line. Ed, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
How did you end up in this county anyway? A good woman, I suppose, brought you up here and got you involved in her GAA, thankfully.
Well, that's it, yeah. Yeah, myself and my wife Emer, we worked together in Aer Lingus. I married my boss, Brendan.
Promotion.
We met each other in Aer Lingus and we worked together for a number of years and got married, and we decided at that stage whether we wanted to live on the east coast or the northwest coast. So ended up anyway in her hometown of Killybegs and became involved with the local GAA club. And from there, I suppose, became a county board delegate and then took up positions on the county board, fixture secretary, and then was PRO for a couple of years and done my term there. And then went to Ulster Council and I've gone back to fixture secretary. I suppose every one of them is a learning curve. And look, there's been great days and there's been sad days to be involved, you know, but on the plus side, like it's all been good, you know. There's, you can't complain too much. You're in it because you love it, so you take the rough with the
listen,
good.
Ed, you have a wealth of experience there, you know, and great negotiating skills. And I'd say the biggest one, having seen you around when I'm up doing bits of media work, you have a good way with you, which is vital when you're trying to get things done at that level. And just pre, Ed, you know, obviously the COVID-19 breakout and the way things have gone, just pre that, the fixtures in the country was the biggest topic, the most awkward topic to deal with out there, and yous were trying every year to get the balance because the club players were feeling they were being left out.
Yeah, look, it'd be a fair enough statement that, and I suppose credit has to go back actually to and Declan Martin before me, and before Declan there was a year there Sean McGinley was in and Dennis Ellis, and it moved on then to Frankie Doherty's time, Declan's time, and regulations changed. We went to clubs, there was a couple of forums there held where usually we'd have maybe a club secretary or a county board delegate in, and on the occasion, the last time that we held two forums, the CCC, we invited in the players and the managers and we asked them what they were looking for. So I think that was a major move on behalf of the CCC. And the players just told us that were present on those nights what they were looking for was really a fixtures calendar where they had football week in, week out. And look, it led first, we'd starred fixtures. We then moved away from starred fixtures. And now we have a continuation of football week in, week out. Yeah, there's a couple of weeks maybe we do allow for the Gaeltas on the May Bank Holiday and June Bank Holiday weekend, but apart from that there's no real breaks. We maybe an Ulster final should we make it to it, and we've tried this year to accommodate as many weekends as possible where clubs may have a wedding. We've worked around that, so we had a pretty good fixture schedule going for the last number of years, and this year we'd built on the previous five. And unfortunately, look, they're going to be binned. But the one thing I would say maybe about the only, from a GAA point of view, possibly the only good thing that's going to come of this virus we do have the opportunity, possibly now, to look at our master fixture schedule and plans right from top to bottom, so from the national fixtures right down. We'll never possibly have this position again where everything is ground to a halt. You know, hopefully it's given maybe a bit of time for people to reflect on the club fixtures and how they're run versus county fixtures and how to fit everything in. And we've seen that in the McKenna Cup, in the under-20s, you know, and college football. Club football has been squeezed, and we need to reflect on that. And I think this virus may have given the chance for everyone to reflect on different things, but in particular for me, I would now be saying it's given time to reflect on club football. If anything that has happened at this time is the national committees have been able to ask, you know, each club in every parish in Ireland to help out at this time. And I think therein lies what the GAA is about, community and right down at the grassroots level. And I think that needs to be the same with fixtures. Club football needs to be the one that takes centre stage from all of this. That's just my personal belief. I think we are in a great position that we can now look at it. We're in a terrible position with this virus and all that goes with it, but it gives us time to reflect on the association. And everybody knows, we're always told, the foundation stone of the GAA is its clubs. Well, the virus has certainly weakened the clubs. They're not able to fundraise. They're not able to get out and be part of the community as much as they can, although they're helping out in different ways now. And they have to be commended for that. But for the perspective of looking at fixtures going forward, our economy is going to suffer. And I think the only way that we can help the local economies and the small shops and the small businesses that give us vouchers throughout the year, these are the people we need to help. And I think club football can be the turning point there, get the people back out in the community. Once the social distancing is relaxed, I think we have to focus on our club fixtures. The All-Ireland series, look, that's for other men and women to decide on what should happen there. Personally, if it was me, I would push
tell
it
me,
back.
Is the word coming out there that basically it said that, you know, that the senior championship has to be fulfilled, and then again the club just has to work around that they're basically going to put dates in, and then everybody has to work around it, which is again going back to that issue that you spoke about before, that the club is secondary thought as usual?
In all of this, we are a very united association in getting over the current crisis in the country. That's the first thing, I suppose, has to be pointed out here. The second thing that I would say to you is the club has to become the focus. And I don't know for definite, everything coming out of that we're hearing about fixtures is, of course, rumour until there's a relaxation of the measures that are currently in place for the virus. When they are lifted, you would hope that the focus will shift back to club. I have seen other counties make comments there, and I've seen in particular Darren O'Hagan, the Down captain. He said, look, there'll always be a GAA no matter what happens. Social distancing measures being extended may mean championships has to be deferred. And his point was very clear, where he said at the end, you know, that we'll always have the GAA, but we may not have family members. So the key thing is to follow the guidelines that we have. And if that means pushing back senior inter-county championship because tens of thousands of people will be in the one place, well, then hopefully the focus will shift it back to club, and there will be a realisation at every level that the clubs have so much to offer, and including building a strong economy again, you know, locally, and that will have its rewards nationally. So I don't know what the plans are. Like I said, nobody can tell us exactly what the plans are nationally, and we can't do anything about local plans until then. But my only hope is that club football is given the priority that it takes centre stage, And rather than it being squeezed into a calendar and becoming the sacrificial lamb, I hope club football is given priority at the end of this. I think that is really important.
Yeah, I just think when you're looking at it, does this come from a like Crow Park hiring top executives who are looking at the GA brand and looking at the power of the TV and the sponsorship? And of course, they're up in Crow Park, so if they set out structures to bring in revenue, which is their job, and they're sitting up there, then of course the power brokers that are all around them, who have hired them to do this job, means that there's somebody obviously speaking for the clubs, but if that's been the focus, and it seems to have been for a long time, then of course the club's going to get pushed back. And I think it's just this last few years in particular, you know, with club championships being run off, you know, in a matter of weeks. And when I think back to my early playing days with Unions, the first few championships we won, playing in the summer, a few weeks apart, and the buzz of all that. Now, I know that's impossible now, Ed, but surely we have to get back to a time when not only club championships is not squeezed in, but it's played in a summer time and played when lads can actually enjoy the experience and not just forced into, you know, an autumn month when conditions can be good or bad, and then you're like everything's just run off Sundays and Wednesday nights and that. We've got to find a way to incorporate that. And of course, with Super 8s coming in now, certain counties are going to have an extended season, other ones aren't. And again, that goes back to the rich and poor. But certainly, when it comes to clubs, we've got to find a way for club players to know exactly where they're at and know exactly where the championship's at and let them enjoy the process, not just be squeezed.
Yeah, look, we would love, I suppose, to be able to spread out our championship over the summer months. And like you said there is people who are brought in possibly to look at how to create a commercial income. And I suppose a lot of that commercial income is needed, because if clubs are doing capital projects, it filters back down, be it through grants or through a loan at a very good rate of interest, you know. There is that aspect of it, and those people are doing a fine job, as our returns would show and the profits that have been made. You say that there is somebody speaking up for the clubs there. There is, I suppose, there's an element of that. The clubs send people to county committee. County committee send people to National Congress and to Central Council, and these are where the decisions and the votes are taken and the new rules and the changes about them are made. And you know, there has been that aspect of it, and where the GAA have been attacked on a couple of occasions on the Sky deal. And I would just, when we have the opportunity, just very quickly on fixtures, I know the Sky deal doesn't suit everybody because not everybody has Sky Sports, but I've heard people say that we sold out. We didn't sell out. These were games that were all put up in front of our national broadcasters and other broadcasters, and they picked the top games they wanted, and the rest were not going to be shown anywhere. And these are the games that the likes of Sky and that and Air Sports would have picked up. These are games that our national broadcaster was not going to show. So the commercial revenue that's coming from there isn't by greed. It is something that the national broadcaster was not showing those games, so others got them. Now, the only thing about that, as you well know as well, is it included Super 8 games and that. I'm not a fan of the Super 8s. I haven't been from day one. I think it takes up too much of our time, and we need to be focused more on our club football in the month of August. The GAA has tried at national level to pull back on some of their fixtures and that, but I think we have to be realistic and look at the under-20s, where they have been thrown into. They're in the middle of third level football. We have at the beginning of the year, in January, we have the McKenna Cup, in the, you know, or be it the O'Byrne Cup in Leinster or wherever. We have them all tied in together. We then start our national league. We then start our own leagues. We then start inter-county championship in the All-Ireland series, and then we're looking at club championship. There needs to be there definitely needs to be a whole revamp of the fixtures. And unfortunately, at the moment, this virus has a terrible knock-on effect in Ireland, but the only thing, and throughout the world, but the only positive from a GAA perspective, surely has given us the time to reflect on what's important to us, and that has to be the club and the other fixtures all around it, the other games, the county, the third level. Everything else should be based around club football. It has to come out of this as a priority. Well, that's my hope, but whether it will or not, then
I think it will, Ed. And listen, thanks. There's some great positive points in there, which is always important. Of course, you know, the bedrock of the GAA and its clubs and its members that are all involved in it. Just you know, clarifying there about the Sky dealing that. Ed, do you not think there's a job for the GAA to be done around the good news stories? You know, it always seems like clubs are coughing up money and having to get this levies in or getting payments in. But the good news story back about new grounds being open or new facilities or money being given back, we never seem to hear these stories. And I think that feeds in to the whole Sky thing there, which you've clarified perfectly. Everybody thought there was a big sellout to Sky. You know, that isn't the case. And as I say, those good news stories about the help in the community, and that they don't seem to be out there. And I think that kind of tarnishes any of the big deals that's done then, because I don't know where people think all the money is going, because it has to be used by the GAA, you know what I mean? And I know it's doing well in terms of revenues, but as you said, that all filters back then, but where that's filtered to, we rarely hear about, you know?
You know, I suppose GAA is not a business of, in normal sense of the business terms, but it is run like a business, and I suppose like any business, unless you go looking really and truly, there is no breakdown of what comes in. Yeah, look, maybe in a couple of weeks' time, you will have seen the development grants that will have come from the provincial council. So they will have made any club that's had a development. I go back to 2010 to when Killybegs were opening their new development. You would have a breakdown and allowance for dressing rooms, for ladies' dressing rooms, referee rooms, you know, the help towards, say, a gym. There is grants there right down the line for capital works that are going on, projects. Every year there is money given for verti draining. Look, we will all claim it's not enough. There's no point in me telling you different. I can't say I will be happy with the cost of verti draining versus what you get back in a grant. You'd like to see the full amount coming to you. Of course you would. But, I mean, I suppose it's like everything else. If you don't work at the fundraising end of it and you expect hand downs the whole time, we probably wouldn't be as a successful organisation as we are. So the graft that's put in at club level, and I don't believe there's any harder working unit in the association than the club. That is where really the volunteers, and in the middle of this crisis you see this, who are the people that are out in the streets from the clubs? It is the people that are tied into their local clubs and are helping out in other ways every day of the week. And you have to now feel sorry for the clubs. The fundraising element of it is gone because it's not cheap. Insurance is not cheap. And bear in mind the player injury fund, which is something that as a sporting organisation we should be really proud of. We are the only sporting organisation on this island that offers the player injury fund. And it's costly, fair enough, for the club to do that, but for particularly if you have the two, the ladies and the gents. But the money is coming from the community. We currently are trying to give back a little bit to the community. The good news stories that you asked for coming down, the GAA don't tend to publish where their money is going. If you go look for it, you'll find that if you look in an Ulster final programme, you'll see the percentages made and what's given back into the communities, back into the local clubs. But the grants are there. But it's the same as a business. They don't publish the full amount to every unit or every club that they're given money. They just don't do it. It's down, I suppose, to the local clubs to mention that. Maybe it's something that we could reflect and look upon is to show where the money actually goes. But it's not like that. I know people say the Sky was a sellout deal and it should be going to the national broadcaster. Let's be clear. The national broadcaster picked the games that they wanted and the rest then are given elsewhere. That's what I'm hearing. That's what I'm told when I've asked the questions on it. So, look, the positive thing to come out of this, I suppose, Brendan, is it's going to give time for those people who make the decisions nationally. It's going to give them time that they may not have had to review the fixtures calendar further with no games on. But please God, when the restrictions are lifted, when all of this is over, please God, it'll be back to building strong GA in local communities. And that's all we can hope for, and being able to make fixtures to meet the demand. Because one thing I've heard from local clubs, and I'll not take up too much more of your time, is one thing the clubs have been saying to me, when these restrictions are lifted, and it's a very good point, that rather than maybe a training session in the middle of the week, which clubs tend to train Tuesday, Thursday, they've asked the CCC to look at putting on regional fixtures on one of the nights, along with a league, just so to get people back out and playing football, just so it's somewhere for people to go. And that's positive that clubs in this county are now saying, well, look, we should be able to fulfil midweek fixtures, because that, now look, it will be just a regional maybe type of thing, and it won't be penalties for reserve and senior teams being put together, because that's what you would have to do. But people are thinking ahead now, and people are wanting to get back out there, and that's, you know, that's something that's very positive. But I would also urge people to stay safe at the moment and do follow all the guidelines that are out there. You know, they're there for a reason. Yeah.
Are you more than 2 kilometres from your lovely beaches down there? Are you stuck in the house?
I'm just on the verge, but I actually have down a port and across at the end of the road from my house is a lovely stone beach and a pier, and it's a good walk. And when you're up to it, Damien, or Brendan, when you're up to the walk, I'll bring you on the tour and show you the 2K.
That's something to look forward to now whenever this all gets lifted. Ed, we'll definitely go for a stroll on the beach. It sounds nice and romantic. Listen, Ed, we'll shoot the breeze in. Ed, thanks very much for joining us on the DL Debate. I'll see you soon.
No bother. Take care. Thank you very much.
Right, all now on the DL Debate, we have one of our 92 heroes, Donal Reid, on the line to discuss the life and times and book, Confessions of a Gaelic Footballer. Donal, you're welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Finn.
Donal, it's an absolute honour to have you on your show. Your book is remarkable, and of course, all those proceeds going to pay the house. Kieran O'Donnell gave me the book there last week. I met him down the Dry Arts there along with Kieran Brogan. We sat in Four Corners to have a quick chat. And obviously, he's mentioned in your acknowledgements, a good friend of yours as well. And Peter Campbell, of course, very instrumental in the book. And your wife, Maura, of course, Donna and Roisin, your daughters. Now, Donal, I wanted to read the book kind of half through before I made the donation to see how good it was. So certainly the donation went up as we went under the book, because it's an absolutely fascinating read, and it was a pleasure to go through it and go through your life story. I want to expose, Kieran, just jump straight in from your early times, you know, living in the cross. And I was struck again by, I suppose, the innocence of the time. And, you know, at the minute, I suppose every parent knows where their kid's at. That unfortunately, in these times, they're probably sitting looking at them stuck in the house. But you just get the sense of the freedom there of doing your thing about cross, helping out in the creamery with your dad.
Yeah, well, it was different times then, I suppose. People had nothing. And it was tougher times, I suppose, but people were, I suppose, a lot happier. There was more of a community feeling. I'll tell you one thing, my father didn't let us sit about the house. He always sent out to help the neighbours with groceries, and then when the time for the bog came, you're helping out in the bog. And when the time for the potatoes came, digging the potatoes, you're out helping neighbours with their potatoes. And that's the way it was. Very basic times, but very good times, and a very, very, very busy time. The world has changed a lot, and I suppose people call it progress. And we have to embrace progress. But then again, I was fortunate. I was at a very good childhood. We had nothing but football. We had hurling and football here, and we had no other distractions, which was great. And we made a life out of it, which was great for the Red Qs and Kilgarden GA.
Mm. So your first job then, kind of outside of helping your dad, which funnily enough in Jackson's, where you were going to follow that path after that, around hotel management and your course in Galway. Your pictures early on, of course, were, you know, striking. You know, you were a handsome man. You know, still are.
Thanks
of course.
Very much, Trim.
And the pictures of your extended family with Sam, you know, are great. Obviously, we'll get to Sam. But don't left your education in locally and in Stranorler, and that you were again the difference in times. You were dropped off in Galway. There's a room. You were going for a course in hotel management, and basically there you go, make your own way.
Well, you know, parents didn't have time then. You know, they were busy, and that was the time when mothers were rearing big families at home. And the father was out earning a living and putting his, what would you say, they were earning a living for the family. But I was left in Galway, dumped off, and I stayed in different bed sets for first few months, and I would say I was quite lonely. But I fell in with a couple of fellas from Southern Africa, which changed my whole perspective in life. And you see where I mentioned those guys in my book, and I still go out to Southern Africa to meet those guys from time to time. But it was a different era, different times, very innocent, but I was quite lonely. We didn't have mobile phones then, and but listen, when you look back, it makes you a stronger person, and you had to survive on your own. There was really little choice. That's what you had to do.
Yeah, you had to grow up fast. And from knowing you then, you were so together as a man by the time I met you. It's well hard for me to understand you down in Galway and not maybe kind of living it up more, which of course you did once you met those guys and fell in with them. You were involved with the 21s, and this was the start of, I suppose, the real start of this remarkable career of yours. And it wasn't all plain sailing, in terms of getting into the team around Ulster Championship.
That's right. I had a great friend that time, Seamus O'Reilly. He's from originally from Mayo, but lived in Mindoran, and he and I played football together, and we used to have great fun. And I suppose I was coming off the back of being managed by Brian McAniff, and then Tom Conlon, who was a great disciplinarian. And I suppose I wasn't my own man at that stage. I would still have a lot of regrets about what I'd done in those times with management of players. Sometimes maybe I think I was too strict, and I suppose I was being controlled a lot by those guys that were in the county board at the time. I don't mean that in a bad way, but I was kind of finding my feet, and had a big regret in respect of a fellow called Shane Bradley, who had dropped in 1996, because he had played soccer the week before with Fanland United. And I mean, I regret that forever, and I should have played the fellow. Had we played him, we probably won the Ulster Championship that year, but we did win it in 1995. But that was you were involved then yourself,
then,
weren't you?
Yeah. I'll bring you up that at a brief romance with the 21s. I was still a bit young then. It was a couple of years before my time done, but you're the only one that actually bring me into a county squad. I hadn't played at all underage and was only in the round then. I was playing a bit of soccer with Harps, and funnily enough, I went straight into the senior team. But Don, just getting you back into that 21s time, you at the time you were getting placements, you'd been in London, and you come back, and McNiff then offered you a job in the Great Northern. One hand he had a contract, and the other hand he had a form for Bundoran GAA. Was a cute move. He signed you up, and you started to work for him.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, looking back, I suppose I was headhunted by Brian at the time. I didn't know it, but it was a job. I was just finished in college, and Brian was on the lookout. And one of the conditions about the job in the Great Northern Hotel was that I would sign a transfer form. He wasn't really concerned about my qualifications for the hotel work. He was cute. He had a transfer form with him on the day of the job interview, and signed the dotted line, and had a great time in Bundoran, I must say. And Brian taught me an awful lot. He was still playing himself. He played me at centre half back, and he played right half back, and he told me when to move and when not to move, taught me a lot about tackling, and it put on my game an awful lot. And I suppose I had been playing in the forward line, but Brian brought me back into the half back line and said, "You're better facing the ball, because it was easier to attack the ball than get a ball and turn that. I didn't really have that skill. I wasn't like yourself, Brendan, you know."
But Don, you were in and out, obviously, of the team through Ulster. You kept coming on sub, and then in the semi final, you actually hit the winner against Laois. And you know, Roscommon in the final, Carrigan, Shannon, Donegal had never won at any grade, or never won an under 21 All Ireland, or at any grade in All Ireland. That was to be the historic first, and you started the game. So you know, you come in at the right time anyway for the big one.
Well, you know, as I've mentioned, Tom Conlon, Tom was a great disciplinarian, and I was working in Great Northern at the time as assistant manager, and it wasn't always easy to get away. He had training in Town of Willie, and often I would have to hitch there if I didn't get the lift with there was a group of fellows went down from Ballyshannon. There was Tommy McDermott, and there was Sylvester Maguire, and Brian Toohey, and then they picked up Matt Gallagher, and normally, well, I was in that group as well, but often I was working, and I landed late at training one day at Town of Willie, and I was climbing over the gate to train that already started, and Tom chased me and dropped me for the next game. It wasn't my fault, but that's the way it was, and then it came on as sub, and I suppose I had to work harder than most players then to get back into the team, but football was good to me then, and continued to be good to me then after that.
He had the line, of course, "Be a training or be dead," basically, was Tom's line. That was your only excuse, Donald. So just straight after that, you could promote it into the senior team. Donegal, it's hard to believe, you know, Donald, looking back, Donegal were in Division 3 at that stage. You know, your first game was in Dundalk against Louth. And straight away, you know, you talk about the laugh on the bus. And like, I was exactly the same, you know, down the back and all the crack. And I was just thinking, as time has gone on now, particularly with phones, you can imagine everybody just stuck on their phones now. There's so much going on your phones. But at the time, particularly, I suppose, my early years, you had to make the crack down the back of the bus and that. And it was something you enjoyed, and enjoyed the banter with the boys.
Yeah, it's something I really looked forward to. I absolutely loved going to training, to meet the boys, have the crack. You know, we worked hard, and I suppose we played hard in the bus, but it was a minibus, and God rest Michael Houston. Michael would be driving, Mickey called him, Mickey would be driving the bus, and the bus wasn't the best, and we'd be crammed into the bus, almost 30 of us, and we had great fun going to the match, one lose or draw, we had great fun coming back, but we had a good group of fellas, and we managed to get into Division 2 and then on to Division 1. But once we got into Division 1, things took on a different perspective, because we were in the serious stuff then. But still, again, times were different then. Football wasn't as serious. The entertainment value was great. And it's moved on to a different level now. It's evolved to a different level, a more serious approach and a more professional approach. And it's just the way the game has changed. Whether it's for the good or for the worse, I'm not too sure.
You've seen it from all angles, Don. That first year, though, Don, you're in the senior team, you're in Division 3. Donegal won Ulster, of course, which, you know, was up, like, for you, after winning the All-Ireland Under-21s, you're involved in the senior team. You go all the way to the Ulster final, which is back, in, of course, in knockout times. So, you know, it must have been dreamland stuff. You know, you say in the bus that training under McNiff wasn't as tough. You know, Conlon was obviously very regimented. McNiff had that father figure style, which, you know, I had with him as well. he kind of was there to look after you, in some ways wouldn't be too tough on you. He always maybe had your back. And you were, you've quoted that in the book as well, that the sessions weren't as tough, but you always had this inner regime, Donal, that you trained and trained hard. You had the athletics background, the cross country you did when you were younger, which really stood to you. But that first year, Donal, must have been magical. I mean, it's so funny to read about you go down to the Creighton bar, you know, for your shipping sandwiches before the game, go down past all the crowd and everybody on the drink and that again.
That's right.
So different to the modern day football. But Donal, you went all the way, I mean, Croke Park, first time at Croke Park, against Galway. Would you believe, Donal, I was actually at that game. My mum's from Galway, and I was down staying in a cousin's house, and we tore up to Dublin on the morning and watched the game. But it wasn't to be. But still, for you, Donal, at that age, it must have been dream stuff.
It was. Well, we thought, well, this was the way it was always going to be. We're going to win these Ulster titles year after year after year, and this was going to be easy. The thing was, we had an under. We're coming off the back of winning an All-Ireland title. We had quite a few players in there who were going to make it a senior level. We thought, anyway, a good few of them, but I would say maybe 6, 7, 8 made it into senior level. And then we won the Ulster title in 83. But then with barren years, then with which brought us back down to basics, and then the amalgamation then of the under 21 title that was won, I think it was 1987 with PJ McGowan. You know, the combination of those two teams really solidified the team, and then we had a brilliant team. Then there was great competition for places.
Yeah, you got knocked out for, I think it was 4 years in a row. Was it first round then, Donal? Which must have been, I mean, I still remember playing. The first few years I played was knockout championship. It was exciting, but it was some blow to go. But we obviously lost that age. I think it was so tough. But while you weren't winning first rounds, as you said, you were climbing up the divisions and you were building some level of momentum, Donal. And then, of course, the 87... All-Ireland, which the first game in Tuam, funny enough, I was down in Tuam at that as well. I don't remember a lot about these games, Donal, but I was at them. But you have some interesting stories, even about going through checkpoints in the north, coming over and back. It's funny, Donal, all things that I've kind of forgotten about, you know, the way times were, the differences in the game, because it's made such a jump, particularly this last, say, 10 to 15 years.
Serious change. There's been a serious shift in the modern game. And I say, I don't know if it's good or if it's bad. I personally, you know, can't have any regrets about the time I played, because we had great fun. I'm not saying the current players don't have great fun. We genuinely had fun. We didn't have mobile phones. We were forced to talk to one another. There was different okay, there was different clicks, but we were still very much a unit. The way the game has gone now is very professional, and the fellas are sitting on phones. And I remember sitting on the bus the first time with Jim McGuinness in 2012 as a physical therapist. I was sitting beside one of the players. I didn't know who he was. I believe it was Paddy McGrath, and I asked him who he was texting. He says, "I'm texting one of the players at the back of the bus." I said, why didn't you go down and chat to him? Oh, he says, "You've lost it." He says, "You have to embrace technology." So there's that bit lost. There's that face-to-face thing is lost, but it's a reflection of what society is now today. That art of social interaction has gone, but listen, we have to embrace the times, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But again, I can't say I absolutely loved the time I was playing GA and the times that are in it. We had good teams, we had poor teams, I would say we never had bad teams, but as I say, I was very fortunate to be part of a team in 1980, 81, 82, and then in 91, 92, where with some really great superstars.
Yeah. Of course, you're back with the cross now, and you took a wee trip to Boston for a bit of a summer jaunt as well, where you're thrown in the deep end in some sights. That made me laugh. as many a young Irishman was there, just you were pointed towards a job to do, and you had to go on and make your mind up on how to do it there and then.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I learned to mix cement. They called mortar out there, and if ever they called sheetrocking, and they call it, we call it plasterboarding here, you know. So I met a young fella from Sligo, and the two of us hadn't a clue, but we were just dropped off at a house one morning. We're told to sheetrock this place. We had a skeleton of a house. We didn't know how to do it. So we left us a truck, and we headed down to the hardware store, and we bought some sheets of plasterboard, and we didn't even know how to cut it. So we started breaking them, and nailed it up, and there was gaps everywhere. But we did quite a few houses like that. You know, we were proud of our work, but then the plasters came in, and we had a bad name, we had a bad reputation, myself and this guy from Sligo. So obviously we were taken off that job, and we were sent out to a lot of pointing then and painting on buildings. And it was good fun. We were there for the football. They didn't really care about our trade skills. We were just there for the football, which was...
Thankfully, your football saved you. I can imagine some of them jobs, how they looked.
They were serious now.
So, Donald, you got the call to come back then, Red. You were in the semi-final. You beat Killy Beggs, but unfortunately lost to A. Rua. You married the love of your life, Maura, of course, and finally got yourself... I don't know how you managed all this, Donald, without a car. You finally got yourself a set of wheels, anyway, a wee Peugeot, a van, and you were on the road. You changed over then to the Mount Errigal, which probably was going to work a bit better for you in terms of getting up and down. It must have been a serious draw on your time, getting up and down to Bundoran. And, of course, the pressures of a busy hotel. So you relocated to Letterkenny.
Relocated to Letterkenny. Just moved from one McEnough hotel to another. Moved down with Sean McEnough for a year, and a bit nearer home. I suppose my feet were itchy. I was looking to get out of the hotel business at that stage, because playing football and managing hotels, they don't combine very well, because you work very unsociable hours. So I moved then into Donegal Crimmies, which gave me better leverage to play football.
Yeah, and I'm just laughing. Tom Conlon took over the team in 86 again, and you had a funny story about Leslie McGettigan, him having a bit of a standoff.
That's right.
Winding him up about what's the osteopath's name, and he brought it up again, and you could tell Tom was absolutely snarling. There's a few
That's right.
expletives on it.
Do you want me to tell that story, or we'll just leave it to the book?
There might be a few bleeps needed to be put in there, but you could tell really Leslie was just winding him then. He probably, I would say, there was a real difference of personalities, and Leslie, no more than yourself, was strong-willed, and he was quick with the tongue as well.
Well, we couldn't, you know, you always had to see the lighter side of things. Tom was a serious man, you know. I mean, I talk to Tom regular, I meet Tom regular nowadays, but he was a serious man then, and you couldn't, you know, you're afraid to open your mouth, and because he had been down on you like a ton of bricks. So Tom wasn't the best diplomatic, you know, or pragmatic. He just, his way or no way, and we took the funny side out of it. There's a fellow there, John Farn, John from down Oris there, Clonmany. John was in Boston with me, and we talked a lot of nights about Tom. You know, Tom, John just couldn't believe what we're dealing with. But Tom got his job done. So I had a mixture, when I went into management myself, I had a mixture of Brian McEnough and the family man, and then I had Tom Conlon, the disciplinarian, so I had a mix of both, and I suppose that's where I was coming at. I just want to say something to you, Brendan, that you didn't probably know. Yeah. You were chatting about your introduction into under-21 football. You probably don't know this, but I was chatting to Kieran O'Donnell, the sub-editor, former sub-editor of the Donegal Democrat the other day, and you know that we're very good friends, and it was Kieran O'Donnell who recommended you for the under-21 football. I never heard of you. As you said, you never played underage. I don't know if you were with the club, but I know you were in Newton Cunningham. You're playing with Van Harps at the time. And I says, I'll give this man a go. And I think that's your start. That is your introduction into county football.
Well, there you go, Kieran. He must have used footballers. And I will say, I think at the time, though, Donald, I was a there was a wild streak in me, and not that the wild streak ever left, but I learned when to time it. I think back then everything was on the table at any time, and sometimes when you're a sub in the squad then and you realise you're well down the pecking order, your kind of attitude, I didn't know even then how much I wanted to follow it. I was caught between the two sports, which happened quite a bit of time there, but it was certainly, I still remember you out running with us, don't you? You said you trained with the players. I remember you out running with us around the track, and I remember thinking to myself, this man is seriously fit, which is one thing that throughout your career stood to you, don't you know? And Conaghan, of course, got us to an Ulster final with yourselves in 89, Tyrone, and then McNiff comes back in, and this was probably a big change in things. Donald Anthony Harkin come in, new style of football, you know, a lot of ball drills. You turned 29 then in 1990, and you were thinking in your own mind, you know, this has to happen soon. You know, even though you were in great condition, you were thinking, you know, there's been a few barren years, that let's give this a rattle.
That's right. 1991, we were well beaten by Down in the Ulster final. And a few of us sat in the dressing room after it, we were coming near. I was 30 years of age. Martin McHugh was the same. I can't remember. Anthony Malloy was sitting there, and we were dejected. And I said to McHugh, I think he'll hang up the boots. He says, Reid, we'll give it another year. He says, we have a good team there. We'll give it another year. And we had a discussion for about 10, 15 minutes, and that was it. And we went to Anthony Harkin. Anthony had been with the team at that stage. We went to Anthony, we had a meeting with Anthony, the players had a meeting with Anthony, and we told him we wanted the training upped. Not there was anything wrong with his training, we just felt we needed to give it a shot and give it a hard shot. So Anthony, and I need to say about Anthony got, is one of the unsung heroes. Anthony Harkin was brilliant, still is a brilliant coach, and one of the unsung heroes in 1992. However, Anthony did up the training, and, you know, it's like anything, unless the players want to do it, it doesn't matter what coach or trainer or manager you have there. But McNiff saw this, want in us, and we knew, although I suppose our supporters were disappointed with the year before and thought we were going nowhere, but we knew within ourselves this team had the makings of a great team that could win an All-Ireland title. And yeah, look what happened.
Well, it's only, you know, I suppose the year before, you know, 1990, you know, beating Armagh, you know, going all the way in Ulster, Meath, you know, obviously were too strong that year. It was a 7-point victory. You said yourself they were big, strong, physical men. When Down beat us in the following year, I mean, obviously went on to win All-Ireland, which in many ways then probably really opened up your mind in terms of, right, these guys have gone all the way and done it. Probably gave you a lot of hope.
That was great,
you went through another county final, unfortunately defeated to Killy Beggs, but again, for Red Hughes, for coming up against all the powerhouses in Donegal and being so close, Donald, you know, there was so much happening, I suppose, sporting ways at that time, but you're right, Donegal regrouped, and of course you were going to make a push then for the famous year of 1992.
Yeah, well, as I say, there was a lot happening then, and you have to realise at that time Ballyshannon and Killy Beggs were really two brilliant teams. There were a lot of inter-county players in both teams, and we also had a good team. Red Hughes had a big, strong team. However, I suppose we needed a player or two more to really get over the line, and Killy Beggs were too good for us, as were Ballyshannon. That was it. Now, we had no hope of Red Hughes. We had little hope of beating Ballyshannon. There were stars to the team, very good team, very well organised, very disciplined, but we could have and we should have probably beaten Killy Beggs. But on the day, it wasn't to be, and a few things happened on the day, and that is it. Again, no regrets. It would be nice to have won that, but I suppose going back again, I'm fortunate to have been part of the inter-county team that won the All-Ireland, and again, I suppose you say, we got our house in order, and we fine-tuned a few things, and there was great camaraderie, but great rivalry there for positions and for slots in the team. And then in 93, I suppose we could have, a few things happened and a few injuries and stuff, but we're some, if the truth be told, I suppose some of us were I suppose on the wrong side of 30, and I suppose we're tired. We played in a replay of the league that year. We drew with Dublin in the National League final, and then went to a replay, and we lost that. And I suppose it was hard to come back from that. But these are reasons, I suppose, not excuses. And again, I can only say how fortunate I was to be part of that great group of players.
Oh, listen, Dolan, fortunate we were to get you, and how quickly you just seemed to ease past your 1992. I can't let it go that quick. I got it. You know, looking back at it, and sometimes you forget, of course, the dodgy start against Kevin McHugh's kick from 50 yards, which, you know, that one kick, when you think about it, everything levelled on that. We beat Kevin Handy in the replay, hammered Fermanagh. And, you know, the waves of Tory, the McNuff line, which I actually heard you quoting years later. You know, that Derry performance, though, John Cunningham getting a red card, 2 points down at half-time. That, I suppose, Donald, would that go down as your... would that top even the All-Ireland final itself in terms of the greatest
that game against Derry was the game that turned our whole outlook on our style of play. We were forced into playing a brand of football that probably suited us. We had a game plan going out against Derry. John Conlon, the Forrester, was sent off before half time, which changed everything. We came in, and you know, there was quiet. There was no panic in the dressing room. It was just quiet. So the players stood up, and we said, I remember I used to had my jersey inside my togs, I pulled my jersey out, and we decided, along with the management team, that we would mark the nearest man. We're a man down. We'd keep the ball at the wings. They were going to play Gary Coleman. He was the spare man. He played a second centre half back. We said we'll just keep the ball off us. And by default, we kind of played a game that was more natural to us, short passing mixed with long ball, a running game, which suited us. And that was the game that I suppose really said to us, we can do this, we can go all the way. But we kept it very quiet within ourselves, and it was a game that I'll always remember as the game that turned the tide for Donegal. You know, we barely beat Cavan. They had a man sent off in the replay, and we drew with Cavan in Breffni Park. Miraculous point by McHugh, and then the replay in Balbuffet. It was a terrible bad day. We had an extra man. They had a man sent off. I was the free man, and we won that game well. But, you know, had Cavan beaten us, we couldn't well have been out. We beat Fermanagh and then Derry, and then with a poor game against Mayo. But we still knew that we were capable of winning this All-Ireland, although the supporters, again... See, supporters, Brendan, as you know, don't really know what goes on, and they don't know what happens in training. They do now because of social media, I suppose. But then, you know, supporters went to the games. They saw the games, they saw a game, that was it. But there's a lot of things happen off the field. You know, the training was very tough. There's injuries to contend with. Then you have players who are playing very well at training. We always knew we were ready for a game. When we started fighting among ourselves at training, we were up for it. We weren't holding back. We were getting into each other. But then we shake hands, and that was it. We knew that year there was a lot of contentious training matches where we could get stuck into one another, and we knew we were ready, we knew we were sharp, and we knew that we had the title within our grasp.
There was such a buzz around the county. Obviously, in between the Ulster final and the semi-final, you had to deal with that horrible shot that you got down in Termon. You know, you had hairline fracture, lost a few teeth. You know, we were very lucky. It was a horrible thing, Don, but thankfully you were able to recover, to come back to playing. Obviously, from the book, it's something that you buried, and it's hard to take them things out, Don, especially since you had the game won. I mean, it was obviously a shot out of jealousy or rage or envy, you know. It wasn't as if it was in a tight championship match where they were trying to take out the best player. So very hard for you to get your head around that. You know, you mentioned obviously your daughter seeing you coming back, the black eyes and all that. It was a tough time, Dolan, but thankfully we got you patched up, and you played in that very irrelevant nearly semi-final against Mayo and into the final. And of course the media had had the Dubs so hyped up. And it's interesting in your book, though, you talk about the cornerbacks in the day. Noel Hegley and Barry McGowan were halfback players or midfield players. Mm-hmm. Matt Gallagher played, you know, for their clubs. Matt Gallagher played midfield for Neave Breed. John Joe played fullback for Neave Columber. He was halfback. Martin Gavigan was a midfielder player for Ardra, and you played midfield for Red Hughes. So, but I think in many ways, don't that ability to play anywhere breeds into the total football that Donegal could play, because every player was comfortable, strong, he had all the skills, he wasn't just a cornerback, he could play anywhere, he could find himself in any position, good on the ball. And then when we won it, then Donegal looked so comfortable, and probably rode a bit early storm, the penalty miss, and got in a couple of points up. You really felt that you had the Dubs rattled on the day. And your memories of the game there, Donal, the first half, and how the game evolved?
Yeah, well, you know, you're talking there about footballers. I suppose a lot of people don't think about when I mentioned the players and their positions. A lot of, see, we always had, and still do, even our current team, we have very good footballers. We have a good, we always had, and Donegal always had and always will have. And it's a great thing to have as pure footballers. And those players could play anywhere in the field, anywhere, as you say, total football. And, you know, when you played along with the likes of Barry McGowan at cornerback or Noel Hegarty, pure footballers, weren't dirty or just wanted to play football. And I would often wonder how those players could adapt to this modern game where you don't have cornerbacks, where you could have them up the field. Or, you know, as I say, the game's changed. But it was one of the advantages we had of a very good, solid, all-round team. Good passers up the ball, could run with the ball, very fit and technically very, very good. And it's an interesting thing, but because a lot of people wouldn't notice that. Those players, they didn't play week in, week out with their clubs in those positions. Very few. Some of the forwards may have, Martin McHugh may have played centre-half forward, you know, or Tony Boyle may have played full forward with them low. But the forwards were different, but the backs were footballers, first of all. And I suppose, as you say, Dublin were hyped out of it. And I remember Desi Farrell saying after the game it was like a death. They couldn't deal with it. But we took full advantage of that type of thing.
Yeah, it must have been just, I mean, the buzz in the county was off the charts. The build-up there, it must have been so difficult as players to try and stay away from that and keep yourselves grounded. And then finally, you had done it. Like, I mean, surreal out in the pitch. You look for your family. It just seemed crazy. I mean, even that night, your story about you felt a wee bit ill. I suppose the emotion of the whole thing, you end up having a cup of tea with some old lady in a house beside the celebrations, and then you come on the TV in the Sunday game.
That's right. They were more. They were coming back from Bridge Island out. We came back on the bus from Croke Park out to the Grand Hotel Malahide. But I wasn't feeling well. I suppose it was build up to the game and all. And I says I'll go out for a walk. So I went along the promenade in Malahide for a walk. And I was just as I walked more, the more sick I got. I felt nauseous. And I was sitting on a bench. I was out for an hour at this stage and sat on the bench, and two elderly ladies came along and said, "Are you all right, love?" And I said, "Well, no, I'm actually feeling a bit sick." I was wearing the green jacket and I had a tie, shirt and tie on me, and those lovely slacks we had. But anyway, come on in for a cup of tea. So I went into their house for a cup of tea, and they're talking about Bridge. And next thing, the program came on, the traditional program they have on at 8 o'clock about the game, and the families or the teams are there, and the winning team was there, and here I could see all the fellas on the team, but I was still too sick to take it in. And the ladies offered me tea and buns, but I didn't touch anything. And I was just sitting watching that, and then one of their husbands came in and said, quizzed me up and down who I was, and he says, "Were you at the match today?" I says, "I was, you know." I says, "I was actually playing." And he says, "You're playing it?" I says, "I was." He says, "Well," I says, "I feel a bit sick." He says, "What's, are you okay?" I says, "No, I'm not, you know." So he says, "Come on," he says, and he told the two old ladies, "This man is playing today." Well, they still kept talking about the Bridge. They weren't going with interest, which was great. It was very funny. But I got back to the hotel, and I found our doctor, Austin, somewhere in the crowd, and I got him to examine me, and he just told me it was a bit of excitement, and he says, I was winding down, and he took me in and into bed, and that was it. And but anyway, I had a nice early breakfast, and
yeah, John, funny bringing back to the old the famous McGee tailored suit. Say you were a real pun up then, boy. And the train. Then, I mean, I loved the train journey back from Sligo. It was probably a good idea. You definitely weren't with McNuff there. You won't be crossing the bridge in Lifford with the Sam. It definitely was going to come up that side.
Oh, that's for sure.
And but the train was probably a great idea, particularly as you said, the wives and girlfriends and everybody was on, and there was a great sing song. And I can imagine those type of times must stand out as some of the special times in your life, you know, because you know it's new territory, it's the first time, and it meant so much to everybody in Donegal, and for young lads like me watching on. Then you know, it just elevated everything about the county. It just created the kind of thing that only sport can do, really.
Well, the train, we didn't really know what to expect. There was a brass band at Connolly Station, and I think it was Connolly Station, and we went in this brass band. It was all surreal, as you say. It was, but it was nice to be able to walk about the train, and, you know, there was no, how would you say, there was no gloating. I think we all wanted, this is something we all wanted as a group to achieve, you know, whether you had played or not played, including the fellows who hadn't played, and it was nice to have the families there. You know, because we had, I mean, I would compare the modern game now to back then. I would still say these guys sacrificed far more than we did, but still, we still sacrificed a lot back then. We trained hard, and to have all the families there, and the media were there, you know, they were all young lads there, Kieran Donald and Peter Campbell and Connor McGonigal was there, and they were part of us, you know, and it was nice to just walk about and talk about the game, and every train station went through, there was people standing waving. We couldn't believe it. It actually took months for the sink in, and as I say, it would give the county a great lift. It was definitely special times.
And Dole, just coming back to Cross, it was a nice moment. You said to Marty Carlin, who was a fantastic player, of course, to come up on the stage, and obviously you know Roisin and Donna were in the scene, your two daughters and Mara, and of course the rest of your family there. Such a proud moment, you being obviously the only crossman or the only club player from the area in the side. So important moment and a nice gesture for Marty as well.
That's right. Well, it must have been very difficult for Marty, because we grew up together as youngsters, you know, since there's only 9 months of difference in our ages, and we grew up together as children, and we played about this village here, the Cross, together. And you know, we used to go to houses. We used to actually go in and help neighbours. Marty and I run about together, and we always had a ball of football with us. And I remember there was an old lady we used to put up her wallpaper there. We used to wallpaper her house every year, but she was wee bit. She didn't. I suppose she was doting then. They have a different term of it now, but we used to put up the wallpaper for every year. But it never matched. But she still paid us. You know, she thought we'd done a great job, and we thought we'd done a great job, and that's the way it was. We had great crack at the time, and we grew up playing football together, and we played inter-county football together. And Marty then, he left the squad shortly before the All-Ireland, but it was only fitting that I should bring Marty up. And it was, I know it must have been difficult, for Marty, but I mean, I had never forgotten Marty those times, and it would have helped me an awful lot during my career, you know. So it was only fitting that I'd bring him up to the stage, and because, you know, even before this, friend, you know, there's a lot of players would have contributed to that success. Not only the players who were there at the time, their players came in and out of the squads who got no recognition, who helped other players along, and you cannot forget any of those players. Those players that helped mould other players and played along with them. I mean, I could name several players who should have probably won All-Ireland titles, no more than yourself, who just wasn't forced not to be in a group that were successful with an All-Ireland title. I mean, I was lucky. I was there when we won the second title in 2012. But again, going back to Marty, I say it must have been hard for him, but it was only fitting that I should do that because we were great friends and we're still great friends. And I know it was tough for Marty, but Marty did help me an awful lot.
Yeah, and listen, Donal, it's very hard to know when they step away. You know, suppose after that defeat in 91, you might have thought things was going downhill. I mean, Michael Higgerty, you know, what a great servant to Donegal, stepped
That's
away
right.
in 2011 because he probably got to what he thought was the Holy Grail at that time, which was an Ulster Championship. But, you know, he probably could have hung in the squad. But listen, that's what happens in sports sometimes. 93, Donal, then, of course, you know, you got an injury against Armagh in the semi, a bad injury, and that terrible final, the wet day in Clonus, and, you know, Derry come out on top. Of course, they went on to win All Ireland again, and we had such a glorious time for Ulster. A year later, McNiff gets sacked again. There didn't seem to be any holding back. Only holding back with a knife, eh? You could win it all, Ireland. You're going to get chopped anyway, you know. But so you know, I didn't know that. Don't you throwing your name in the hat for the job? You were into you obviously. Sorry, McGowan came in first of all, and told you that maybe time was ticking against you. You didn't think that was the correct decision at the time, but then as you reflected on it, maybe it was. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I suppose hindsight's a great thing, but I would say actually PG did me a favour. I didn't, you know, I hadn't announced my retirement, but you know, you announce your retirement to come back, you know. Well, at the time, I had no intention of coming back. But you know, after I had said I had enough, because I had a young child, then Donna was born, and I suppose I missed it too much. But I felt in great shape. I wasn't enjoying training that much because I was leaving Mara here with Donna, and I suppose I said I needed to take more active part in family things. But as time went on, I suppose once I had announced my retirement, it took a lot of pressure off my shoulders. I knew I wasn't, I wasn't as fast as I used to be. But I'm back into training then on my own after I announced my retirement, and then PG was appointed manager, and I went for the job at the time, really basically to mark my card for future times and to go through the interview process and to get a feel for it, to see what questions they would be asking. But PG,
Martin McHugh,
PG told
Martin
me the
McHugh
clock
was in for, Martin
the
McHugh
clock
was in for it
against
as well.
Me, but, but at the time I felt PG was wrong, because maybe even if I even just played a half an hour, that's something to give to players coming in.
Exactly. But, I would agree that, you know, I don't see how he wouldn't at least trial to see where you're at first. I mean, it just seems such a heavy hand to come in with. You know, you retired then, Donal. Your quote in the book is, after you retired, you said, "Foolishly, I felt that I had a godlike status where adulation and glorification were the centre of my being." You know, and listen, that can happen when you're in that bubble. Looking back, Donal, now you probably can't understand your way of thinking, but when there was such hype in the county, particularly that first ever All-Ireland, for example, and the buzz about it, you do get elevated up by everybody looking to talk to you and people wanting you here and there, and it's false in many ways, because it's obvious time, whereas you, just being a human being, naturally you get pulled into that way of thinking, and then it's so alien to step away from that there and figure yourself out. But don't, at the time, I say you did some training with Finn Valley, you qualified as a physio, you started to get into management as well then, after your successful under-21s, obviously winning an Ulster, narrowly losing to Kerry in a semi-final. You took on first Clan na Gael in Tyrone, and then Ahi Arn. You had a great time there doing as I say, managing those clubs and learning about club football in Tyrone as well, and then of course you got involved you were involved various times with Declan Bonner. That's where I first met you, Donal.
That's
and
right.
Even after that, I used to go over to your house to get treatment, and you used to, as the man says, put me under some serious pressure in that treatment table. There was no mess in there, and you'd be laughing your bollocks at the same time.
That's right.
There was some tight treatments given out there, but you always looked after yourself, Donal. And then, funnily enough, as I say, you land back in, as you call it, the chapter, the Messiah, McGuinness's time there. And as you said, you always loved the dressing room anyway, Donal, and the banter and the lads. And then you were back into what was again an absolutely glorious time in Donegal football, you know. And you were obviously, to me, Donal, you were more than just a physio when I was up there. You were more like a mentor. We talked about life and everything, and you had a certain way of looking at it, and it was, that's the way it was, you know. You were kind of good natured, but if anybody came across a certain level that you had, they would be in trouble. And that would have been my reading of you. And I'm sure you brought plenty to that dressing room, not only your physio skills in that very special time.
Well, I think looking back on that appointment, I mean, Jim McGuinness rang me over the Christmas period in 2011 and asked me, was I interested in coming into the medical backroom team? And I said I was. I had no hesitation whatsoever. Because I always admired Jim McGuinness. He'd been through a tough time himself, and they were coming off. They had won, the senior team had won an Ulster title. And I mean, I was writing in the paper, and when you're writing in the paper, you have to, as you know yourself, you have to do your homework. And I was keeping a close eye on this group of fellas. And I always liked McGuinness. And I said, yes, I'll give it a go. And, I'll see what this is like. And I went in, and I mean, as I say, I love the dressing room. I was thrown into the deep end. But, you know, McGuinness was cute, I suppose, you know. He wasn't only getting a physio, he knew what he was getting. Yeah. And I remember a player coming in the first night in Castlefin. It was a very cold night, and he got on my table. There was very few there. There was Jim, and there was Michael Murphy and Neil Gallagher, and we're sitting about, and a player that, and he got on the table, he jumped up on my table, and he said to me, he says, give us a rub. And I didn't take too kindly to that, no, you know.
Michael Boyle.
Give us a rub. That's the man.
Treat,
so anyway.
You treat. You don't rub.
Anyway, I asked him what was wrong with him. He says, nothing. Well, I says, when you have something wrong with you, you come back to me and I'll treat you. So he went off and huffed a bit and came back maybe 15 minutes later, and he says, I'm sorry, Donal, I didn't know who you were or who you are. As it's not about who I am, it's how you treat people. It's just treat me with respect. You know, you should say, Donal, can I please have a rub? You know, we'll just cut out the, you know, just be nice, just have respect. And I says, it doesn't matter what I've won, it's nothing. I just treat people with respect. And I says, the next time, Michael, did you have something wrong with you? I said, I'll definitely treat it. And that McGuinness was sitting laughing, and he looked at me and he says, Reid, that's why you're here, you know.
Yeah.
I said, thanks.
Oh, listen,
so, but that exactly was, Jim used to talk to me about the different players, about getting into their heads, and when you get them on the table, if they're injured or not, get them on the table and talk to them. And that's what I would have done a lot of the time, and very few people would know that, but it was going on in the background, and again, you got something out of me that I promise I'd never tell. But anyway, you were the first to hear it.
Well, do you know what? I had no doubt in it anyway. And anybody knows you was around, like as I say, in the Boner years as well. When you came in, you know, I had to laugh at you. Used to call McGuinness Cher back in the day.
That's right.
If you had told me that time, we used to be putting all kinds of nicknames on him. I didn't know that. Until I read the book. But I just take me back when you came on one of the American trips. I remember back in the day, Donal, there was a lot of boozing going on then. It was an absolute crazy siege. And I know since, listen, you've come back to your faith. You always give me a line, keep the faith. But we met this morning and the lads were in horrendous shape lying about the foyer. There was a training session that evening, and there was a bus to be organised for Mass. It was a Sunday morning, and the I don't know who was trying to organise it, but they were like, what about this? Who's going to Mass? Hands up. And you come out with a line, geez, maybe you should hire a motorbike. That should do the There was nobody really game for Mass at that time, Donal. But, you know, those times in my gym then as well, they'll culminate in, I suppose, the magic of 2012, being around that, amazing. And, of course, the heartbreak eventually, even though 2014 made the brilliant one over Dublin, there was the heartbreak of that that last dressing room, Donal, and that you decided to take a break from, I suppose, what was a huge commitment again to Donegal those years under Jim.
Yeah, when I was back in with that squad and from late 2011 to 2014, I mean, I was finding the going tough. You know, it was very, very tough because those fellas trained twice as long. I mean, they were training 3 hours, 3.5 hours. Mm-hmm. They were training two, if not three nights a week. Plus, they were going to the collective gym sessions in the mornings. And we were away every weekend at training camps, either in the county or outside the county, away from Saturday morning to Sunday afternoon. And again, I was very fortunate that I was there. I could see things. I could see. It took me 6 months. Jim McGuinness used to have a whiteboard up, and it had dots on it, it had markers on it, and it had zones, and it had just numbers on it. And it took me a good 6 months to decipher what was on this board. And he never called players by name, really, just called them by numbers and these systems and formats and styles of play. I still didn't know, but at 6 months I finally grasped it. But it was interesting. It was very interesting to see how professional the thing had moved on, and a lot of great things. Now, don't get me wrong, unless you're at that level, you'll definitely not compete in the modern game unless you analyse and analyse the opposition and your own team inside out. You will not compete, but you need the resources, the financial resources, and our county board and sponsors have been very good with the Donegal team. And as I say, I saw massive changes. I mean, the first night I landed in the dressing room, the players kept their jerseys, were hanging up, training jerseys and togs and socks, and they had these GPS systems, and there's numbers on them. I said, these boys are spoiled. But it's not spoiled. I mean, I misread the situation. Not spoiled. They deserve that. That's the way things are. And, you know, there was somebody there at the side of the pitch with a computer, and they were doing, they were monitoring the players to see how they were performing. And if they weren't performing more than 98% capacity, they were pulled to the side by McGuinness or by Rory Gallagher and said, listen, you need to up your thinning here. They show you a map out where what distance you had ran and where you ran, and I mean, they had a dietitian would come in a couple of times a month and take urine samples, and obviously the doctor was taking blood samples and stuff. I mean, to see that the guys were performing to their potential, all good, but you know, something gets lost there when this happens, and I think a bit of the crack gets lost, and that's where the GAA is going to have to decide soon, you know, whether we go semi-professional or just keep. It's very hard for the GAA at the minute to keep it an amateur game because how professional the thing has become, and that's where you lost a wee bit of the crack. And the fellas are very focused and very, very serious, and it was good to see that aspect of the game. And I say, you know, the style of play, I always say that Mickey Hart, Tyrone manager, he developed this system, where this defensive system, and to me, Jim McGuinness perfected it. But then other teams copped onto it, you know, copped onto the system. And again, go back to 2014, you know, our aim was to, I mean, I was at every training or every meeting that Jim McGuinness had, everyone was at the meeting. That included physios, doctors, ball boys, everyone, logicians, they were all there because we worked as a unit, and I knew what was going on. And the plan that day of the 2014 final was that we had won the throw-in and we'd put a long ball into Michael Murphy. But in first, they won the throw-in, a long ball was thrown in and they got a goal, and we were on the back foot. But McGuinness never deviated from his plan. You know, and it was just unfortunate on the day that we were playing off the back foot. And it was, although we lost the game, you know, there was a lot learned on the day. But at the end, then Jim left, I suppose. He had enough done, I suppose. He had his time was up. And when I saw the ship sinking, I suppose, at the time too, I was getting tired, and the training sessions were very long, and I was missing time at home here, and I suppose I threw in the towel then as well. I suppose it wasn't throwing in the towel, just our time was up.
It definitely was not thrown in the towel 100%, and you know, Donald, absolutely amazing. You're on about since 1983, that's even if you started there from that under 21, all your involvement through playing, managing, you know, being physio, and just as you said there, being more than physio, you know, around the background. What a time you gave him to Donegal. You know, you've travelled the world, Donald, you had a love affair with South Africa, of course, and you've been involved in so much of this county, and such an amazing life so far. And Donald, I want to thank you so much for sharing your story and with us here on the DL Debate.
Thanks very much, friend.
Right, folks, that's a wrap. I want to thank Ed Byrne, County Board Official, for coming on there and his words around the future fixtures in football in Donegal. And also, listen, what an amazing experience it was to go through the life and times of Donal Reid, Confessions of a Gaelic Footballer. An absolutely fascinating story, top to bottom, and I hope we captured that for you. So I want to thank the two lads for coming on. That's episode 9. Looking forward to episode 10, out next Monday evening on HighlandRadio.com.
Brought to you by the Dry Arch Complex 24-hour service station, Letterkenny. We're here for all your needs.